Meditation session today. Unfortunately, this is our last session for the monks because tomorrow we're starting our rains retreat. But don't worry, because there's so many recordings. And even though we won't be coming up here, you can always visit down. Actually, this is down here. Up there is up there at Serpentine on the hills. It's a beautiful little place. And it's a time when all of the monastic communities throughout the world. At this particular time, we have this beautiful rains retreat. So it's a time that we deliberately let our body stop going from place to place and stay in one place. At the same time, let our mind, instead of wandering from place to place, come back into one place. And sometimes when you stay in one place long enough, you get to like it and get to love it so much, you wonder why you want to travel anywhere. The same with the mind. When you get into this inner place inside, nice and peaceful, nice and quiet, nice and comfortable, you wonder why the mind ever wants to wander anywhere. Because you stay still, stay right here, and it becomes a very beautiful abiding. Such a beautiful abiding, there's just one new word which somebody said of like enhanced perceptions. It means because you're not wandering around, because you're not wasting energy, I'm talking about mental energy, because you're not wasting that energy, it tends to build up. And when it builds up, you tend to get some very clear perceptions and also very powerful perceptions. You literally see deeper into things. And what you see, what surprised me, was you see more beautiful things. Everything becomes as if it's like polished. The greens are greener, the clouds have got more detail in them, and they're fascinating. It's weird, but it seems to be that there is a lot of joy and happiness in this world, but we're too busy to really appreciate it. And it's a real phenomenon. So when you do slow down, relax, get your energies back up again, what you see is very delightful. And that delight is something, it's one of the important reasons why your mind doesn't wander off in meditation. You know, for years I sort of thought, why is it I'm sitting here, got nothing to do, nowhere to go, but the mind goes wandering off, you know, thinking fantasies, planning, old memories, you know, some real, some false, whatever. But anyway, why does it ever want to go anywhere? And it was because what I was experiencing right now in this moment was not delightful enough. And it's something, it's a truth, but sometimes it's more complicated than such a simple statement as I'm about to say. But the mind needs joy and happiness. If it doesn't find it in this moment, it will go searching for it somewhere else. In meditation, it means you'll go wandering, thinking, fantasizing, remembering music or football or whatever it is you had joy in the past with. You have joy now in thinking about those things. But if the mind is really, really happy, it doesn't need those things. And there's so much, you know, experiences in my life, little things like in Thailand we used to meditate all night once a week. And when I was meditating all night, when I first year as a monk in Thailand, obviously about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, started getting very, very sleepy. And then I thought to myself, just about 2 or 3 years previous to that, when I was still a layperson, I would still go to all-night parties, all-night rock concerts. And I never felt sleepy at 1 o'clock in the morning when I was listening to an all-night concert of Jefferson Airplane and the Doors. That's a chalk farm. I remember that, the roundhouse. Anyway, back to real life, that's where I came from. But anyway, when you start thinking about why the mind wanders, instead of just trying to discipline it, instead of just saying, so no mind, you can't go anywhere, you stay put. The whole purpose, or the whole force behind meditation, is ethos, is the word I was looking for. The ethos is not to use force, but to use wisdom. Why does the mind wander? And you find out it's because it's not happy here. If it's happy where it was, it wouldn't need to go anywhere. It wouldn't want to go anywhere. And that's one of the reasons why that what you learn in meditation also works in life itself. In monasteries, why would, like a monk, want to go somewhere else other than Bodhinyana? Because they're not happy there. Why would a nun want to go somewhere? Why in your job would you want to look for another job? Why in your house you want to look for another house? Why? Because there's not enough happiness, contentment and appreciation of where you actually are. And so in meditation, what we're really focusing on, not so much of life, if you're happy where you are, you don't want to go anywhere, you stay still. You stay here, in this mind, no matter what it is, just because you enjoy it. And the next thing which happens is the delight, the happiness starts to increase. The happiness is built from stillness. When you don't move, it's like all the energy, all the power is not used up. Instead, it increases and increases and increases and increases. And you get like awake. I don't know when you first get up in the morning. I don't know how many of you have a cup of coffee. Why? Gives you a boost of energy. You wake up quickly instead of slowly. And also, if you have a good cup of coffee or tea or whatever else you have, you find that you are easy to talk to. I tell the monks this, you know, you should know this by now. If you want to ask me a question, if you want to ask for a favor, have a look to see how much happiness I've got. And if I just come out of a very nice meditation and you, Venerable Rad, ask, oh, can I have this? I say, oh yeah, sure. Can I go over there? Oh yeah, no trouble. I didn't get the message, because not only are you energize, but you also have a lot of happiness and joy and are very easy to live with. And so little by little, we learn how to increase our awareness and find more joy in life. And it is strange, but even that first year when I came to Perth, this 37 years ago, we lived in North Perth in a little house in Magnolia Street, and that's where we spent our first range retreat, a tiny little, I think, 3 or 4 room house with outside toilet. It was lovely. I had some wonderful meditation there, simply because you go in your room, close your eyes, and you can bliss out. How can you bliss out, you know, in town? Easy, you just go inside. So little by little, by going inside means you stay still. And the other thing I should mention with that stillness, what happens, is when there's stillness, things vanish, they disappear. Which is one of the other reasons it gives you this wonderful simplicity. And what I mean by that, for those of you who heard the story before, when I was only about 21 or 22 or something, I was just desperate to go to any teachings on meditation. And I was staying in the north of England, and I went to this Zen monastery. And I never knew what we were supposed to do. So all they told us to do was to sit in a line and just to watch the wall with open eyes. And it was sort of serious, because they had the Zen master, and they would walk behind you with the Zen stick. And they would hit you if you were sleepy. People told me, oh yeah, you know, if they hit you, it doesn't hurt. But when the guy next to me got hit, I didn't believe that at all. But it worked, because the guy next to me woke up, so did I. For the rest of the retreat, I wasn't sleepy at all. But that was out of fear, not really the right way of doing things. But going back to the story, that watching the wall with your eyes open, just a simple whitewashed wall, and then the wall vanished. It disappeared. And it left existence, which was really weird and strange. And I didn't take any drugs. I didn't even have alcohol at that time. I was a very sort of virtuous young man. Weird, but virtuous. And because of that, was in the early 70s. But I wasn't afraid. I thought, why has a wall suddenly vanished? And after a little moment or two, just contemplating, it was quite clear what happens. I'm now going to prove it to you. Close your eyes, everybody. Now, first of all, when you close your eyes, you can see the inside of your eyelids. After a few seconds, you can't see anything. You can open your eyes again now. Because what happens is your brain is only notices things which change. And if you're seeing something and it doesn't change at all, after a while it vanishes. If you hear something, it could be the background noise of the traffic. It could be the hum of an air conditioner. It can be just the frequency of the air. After a while you cannot hear it. Because your brain only notices things which change. Things which are still vanish. And that gives you a clue of what meditation is and how it works. When you're sitting here and you close your eyes and you're reasonably still, sight vanishes. You're sitting here and this sound doesn't change, then sound vanishes. Your body just sitting here, nothing really is moving, and it's comfortable, and your body vanishes. You've got less things to worry about. It's like less business on your desk, which means you're far freer and more able to energize. And if you resist the temptation to go thinking, fantasizing, planning, remembering, if you resist that and just stay here, this moment becomes so delightful, so peaceful. It's like having your own little retreat. In your busy office, just sitting down and letting everything vanish and disappear. So this is how we become free of so many of these things. The idea of the mind wandering. The mind can wander at the beginning of the meditation when you're just starting, but you just do the meditation a little bit seriously. I always like to start with my body awareness, because the body awareness actually gets you into the present moment, gets you into some kindness, relaxing, feeling the body. I don't know, maybe it's because of my age that, you know, your body is really important, you've got to look after it. See, many people of my age getting sick, but I refuse to get sick. Can you do that? I remember just once when I was in Thailand, so many of the monks were getting sick because of mostly the food in the northeast, which was not really hygienically prepared. So all the monks were getting sick, and I remember this. I told the monks, I said, I'm going to make a vow, I'm not going to get sick this year. And I never did. It was weird. I made a vow to be healthy. And sometimes in the morning, you know, we'd get up and prepare for the alms round early in the morning. And all the other monks would say they were just had diarrhea all night and they were sick with this and sick with that. And they came to me and said, I was okay. A bit unfair really, but sometimes your mind can be so strong, can actually avoid so many things. I mean, that made me believe in the power of the mind, but also just the cause of that health, the stillness of the body, to allow the body to become strong and healthy. And I don't know, but I believe in that so much because you can feel it. Sometimes you can feel the body when it's stressed, it's tight, and you realize that it can't last like that for too long. When the body's nice and loose and relaxed and feels free, sometimes you can feel just the energy going into the correct places and healing happening. I'll talk that to other people as well. And they found marvelous success with just learning how to relax the body, bring it to a state of ease and comfort, and then health benefits happen. So the body is so important. So I always focus on the body to begin with and to relax it, because it brings the awareness into this present moment, because the feelings in the body are only happening now. And philosophies state of the world, that's always past and future. The experience of your body right now, present moment. And the second benefit of body awareness is that you can't really talk too much to yourself about your body. You feel it. And give it a name, it's so difficult to do. And you know that if any of you go to see the doctor, you got some sickness somewhere, and you say, how does it feel? Well, it sort of hurts. How does it hurt? There's so many different degrees of pain, there's so many different types of pain, but sometimes we only know one word. It hurts. So I really feel for doctors, for GPs, who have to somehow or other, from limited information from the patient, somehow find what's going on. But anyhow, little by little, we find out what's going on. But little by little, that when we learn how to know our body and relax it, we become much healthier. And also, it's a great introduction to the meditation. The time when the mind could wander off, instead we're busy with relaxing and looking after our body. And you may notice that when I do this teaching, this guided meditation, I always pause when the body's relaxed so that people can experience the delightful feeling of relaxation. And that's an important teaching. Because once you can notice how delightful it is, you're aware of delight. You're not asleep, you're not dull, but it's delightful to be still. It's delightful to be relaxed in your body, enjoying this moment. You're not wandering anywhere. You don't need to. You don't want to. It's happy being here. And from there we can keep that stillness when we go into our mind. And the mindfulness gets even stronger. You feel the peaceometer. You know exactly what it means. You can just look and see how peaceful is your mind and how to bring it to even deeper peaceful states. And then from there it gets even more delightful. And you're having a wonderful time, just sitting here enjoying this moment, and sometimes the minutes pass by, and you don't realize, wow, has an hour gone by? Felt in like 20 minutes. But it's great because you're enjoying every moment. And the meditation starts to be deeper and deeper. It gets deeper and deeper, you don't have to be concerned about wandering off anywhere because you're enjoying this moment. This moment is so pleasant, you can't wander off. So that joy in the moment is the antidote to the wandering mind. Happy to be here. And if you've enjoyed what I've been saying, then you wouldn't have wandered off. If you got bored, then you may have wandered off. It's a case in point. Okay, so now let's get into the meditation. I usually do this 60 minute just a little briefing, and then I give the guidance. We meditate for about 45 minutes till 4 o'clock. So if you'd like to get into your meditation posture the best you possibly can, if anyone who just came for the beginner's class, there is no beginner's class at the moment, I'm sorry. But anyhow, it's because of the post-COVID that's always having to adapt very quickly. So anyway, because we have to adapt, so we haven't got a beginner's class. We just got an expert's class. All the experts here. Okay, so here we go. So sitting down, close your eyes. With your eyes closed, now we can bring our attention to how we're sitting. To make sure that your physical position is reasonably comfortable. When I was talking, I could not be aware of just my bodily posture. My belt is a bit tight. I'm adjusting things. That feels so much better. So I just give a rough feeling of my physical posture, first of all. Then I go to more detail, more refined, more part by part. I start with my legs. And start with arousing mindfulness. What do you mean by that overused word? I ask my legs, how are you? Just regard my legs as if they were a separate being. Just like if I met one of you and asked you, how are you? And I get a response. My legs say they're reasonably comfortable. Ask my legs, do you need to be adjusted? Can you sustain this position for 45 minutes? My legs say, yeah, I'm fine. And I leave them alone. This is not just checking, like checking a car to see it's got enough water and oil and gas, petrol. It's just showing you're concerned. The power of kindness, compassion is very strong. Just by talking to someone and just acknowledging that you recognize them, it's showing you care for them. And the caring just softens everything. So by showing I care for my legs relax. They become more at ease. And when they are comfortable enough, I go up to my butt. I'm sitting on a cushion, on the edge of a cushion. You're sitting on a chair, make sure that you're sitting comfortably on the chair. See if you can improve it, if at all possible. And I ask my back how it feels. And it's not just asking, it's just doing something in case the back does need some adjusting. My back needs a good stretch. And that feels good. And I can feel any tightness in my back. Focus on it and learn how to relax that tightness. To bring my back to a deeper state of ease. If you have any tightness and tension on the front of your body, in your chest or stomach or breast or heart or wherever, you know, sometimes just focusing on that part of the body, zooming in, giving it kindness. And you can feel that little part of your body which you're focusing on. Just go to a deeper state of ease and relaxation. Your back and front does not need to be perfectly relaxed. Just make it more relaxed. And go up to your shoulders, relax them. Just loosening, not holding anything tight, not stretching things, not pulling things apart. So I often feel that like two ends of the shoulder muscles are just being pulled apart. It's called stress. I just learn from a bit of trial and error and from the feedback which mindfulness gives you. To feel those muscles loosening off and relaxing. I'm going to go, as my shoulders are relaxed, I just feel my arms. It's like I move my attention, my mindfulness down from the shoulders, down the upper arms to the elbows, from the elbows to the wrists, and the wrists to the hands. Feeling as many sensations as I can and making sure everything is relaxed. And those sensations, especially when I get to my hands, there's so many nerve endings there, it's just alive with sensation. Like tingling. It feels good. To relax is to give some delight to your bodily feelings. And I go up back to my shoulders and my neck. I do this because these are the areas, if I don't pay attention, will be painful. I avoid that by checking on them before I really get into the meditation. Moving my head back and forth to stretch those neck muscles to bring them some ease. And then going to the front of the face, the muscles around the eyes and the mouth, making sure they're relaxed, at ease, at peace. I can feel the muscles, sometimes they're tight, sometimes they're loose. The looser they are, the more comfortable they feel. Once I've relaxed the muscles of my face, you can adapt this little method to find out what works for you. But then once I've relaxed these important parts of my body, and I look at the whole body, feel like all joined together, my human body sitting here, attended to as many parts as I could. Now feel it as one whole thing. And it is at peace, it's at ease, it's relaxed. And I keep my awareness on that relaxed feeling until I feel the delight of relaxation, the ease, the rest, the peace of a body which hasn't got too many problems. Sometimes your body with aches and pains, it's like you're overwhelmed with busyness, with physical problems to deal with. But in this stage of the meditation, hopefully there's hardly any problems at all. It's like freedom. And I start noticing the delight of a relaxed body. Until that delight gets stronger and stronger. And my awareness is growing. It's growing and being able to see more, feel more. It's not so distracted, it's going slow. I also notice that when you get to the delight of relaxation, disturbances don't disturb you. The more quiet you are, the more resilience you have. making peace with your body. Being kind to her, being gentle with your body. And after a few moments, it's time to look at your inner world. I call it the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? The opposite is how agitated, disturbed. Giving it a number from 1 up to 10. 1 is really peaceful. 10 is quite agitated. How peaceful are you right now? There's no need to hide the truth or bend the truth. It's only you know this. And what causes the disturbance? What causes the reading on your piezometer to go down closer to 1? Such an important insight to have. The cause of real inner peace. And as usual, you find that being in this moment, just avoiding anything to do with the past, you can deal with that later. And the realization that now is where your future is made. This is the only time you have. So you value this moment. Give it so much importance you stay here. And you avoid giving things a name. You don't need an internal commentary. You feel rather than think. And little by little, we get really peaceful. And peace is delightful. Your level of awareness, its strength is greater. Mindfulness is getting powered up. And you're learning, you're listening, you're feeling the nature of your body and your mind. You're getting to know these things by paying attention, like paying attention in a lecture. You're allowing the information to go in. often people become aware of their breathing at this point. Just know the breath as it comes into your body. You know the breath as it goes out. The reason why the breath meditation becomes important is because it's the only thing which is left moving. So never try and control your breath. Always regard the breath as a friend, as independent, as someone or something which you've got to know, and just hang out together. Just watching your breath come in your body and breath go out. I will be quiet now for about 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And when I start speaking again, it will be close to the end of the meditation. Getting close to the end of the meditation now. How did it go? How do you feel inside? What's it like right now with your mind? How delightful is your peace of mind? And then come to your body. How's the body feel right now? The last minute or so of meditation, we have the opportunity to understand our body and our mind. It's a time when insight can arise. Going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound of the gong. When the 3rd ringing of the gong disappears, it's a signal to come out from your meditation. So I've got some questions from overseas, first of all. And for those of you who don't know, these sessions are live-streamed overseas. Today we have from the Czech Republic, from Germany, from Indonesia, Germany and Hong Kong. So, 5 questions. And it is because the people regard this as a very popular session. From Czech Republic. Ajahn, how do I tell the difference between letting go and denial, ignoring the Freudian displacement? Sometimes it takes a lot of effort, reminding to let go. Is that okay? It is sometimes that many people have theories, whether it's Freudian or Jungian or whatever, but sometimes it's not really denial if it just disappears and goes forever. Denial is a suppressing. So, for letting go, especially of past traumas and past events early in your life, denial will never work. Usually what happens is that you are strong enough, feel safe enough to let it come up. To let it come up and not to put it in the right perspective. Some which happened to you a long time ago. And not to give blame to yourself or to others. And then to understand it as if the past in these particular situations, especially those very difficult ones, have got to teach you something. A lesson that life is a bit out of control, can be unpleasant sometimes. But then it's a lot of times it's very pleasant as well. We have a share of both. And we let it come up. We open the door of our heart to it. Just like we can love all sorts of things in this world. And then when we open the door of our heart to it, it loses its power. I know it's a metaphor I use every week just about of the monster who came into the emperor's palace. And when people said, get out of here, you don't belong, the monster just grew bigger. when people said, welcome monster, thank you for coming here, and looked after and cared for it, the monster shrank until it got so small it vanished completely away. It's another way of dealing with difficult situations in our life, to welcome them. And with, you know, past difficulties and problems and pain, you know, you can't get rid of it. You can't pretend it never happened. So you welcome it. You welcome it, learn from it, and then its power vanishes. The monster gets diminished. So when it's letting go, most of the letting go is just meditation time. It's to take a break from the problems in the world. I've got many things I'm supposed to be organizing for yesterday and for tomorrow. Tomorrow's big ceremonies and goodness knows what else. But when I meditate, I totally let go. People might say, you're in denial, Ajahn Brahma, you should be planning and thinking, and I don't believe in that. So just, you let things go and enjoy this moment. There's a saying, to grant yourself moments of peace. If you don't give themselves, if you don't give yourself those moments of peace, you will never find them. So meditation, you say, I give myself 45 minutes of peacefulness, no matter what problems and difficulties and things face you afterwards. And if you can do that, give yourself peace. Now you find that that's a letting go. And afterwards, whatever problems you have to face afterwards, you find you can face them with far more innovation, seeing new solutions which you were blind to before. And also having more energy to do your duties in this world. So letting go, first of all, is a meditation letting go, it's a temporary letting go, but sometimes it leads to a much bigger letting go. And so denial obviously is just, it's a lying to yourself that these things don't happen, and just trying to hide them under the carpet. But letting go is taking the rubbish and just embracing it, including it, not hiding it, and then it disappears. Anyway, from Germany, can you please explain your thoughts about letting it go and letting it be, how to do it? Also, when to do it in regards to feelings and thoughts and when in pain? Okay, letting go and letting be. So what it is, you let go of controlling, wanting, negativity, I don't want or I want. That's when one lets go of. And when you let that controlling part of your mind go, let it disappear, then what is left is what you let be. So, in other words, it's looking at two things from a different angle. One is, why can't we let things be? We always want to change things, to amend things, to control things. But now, instead of trying to control things, especially in meditation, we leave things alone. We don't want anything. It's strange, but many people know that the first teaching of the Buddha, which is what we're celebrating tomorrow on Asatha Puja Day, when the Buddha gave the first sermon saying suffering is caused by wanting. Imagine you don't want anything. Just imagine, you're totally content in this moment. You don't want to go anywhere, you don't want to be with anybody else except the one sitting right next to you. You're just happy being here. Imagine what that's like. And really make that a perfect contentment. Not wanting anything in the whole world. And how peaceful that becomes. That's letting it go, letting wanting go. And letting what's remaining be. And feelings and thoughts are when in pain. First of all, the thoughts are so deceptive. You know, I just don't believe many of my thoughts. You know, my thoughts, when I tell people about them and I just express my opinion about something, I always get in trouble. Do you get in trouble when you sort of express your ideas to other people and then they think, no, that's not right? But feelings, I don't know, I tend to trust them more than anything. They feel, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like I should be speaking. It doesn't feel like I should be silent. And those like feelings inside, I trust those more and more. So you don't let go of the feelings, you just develop them and get the sensitivity, the beautiful feelings of peace. What a wonderful feeling that is. It's not sort of boring at all, it's just alive, it's vibrant, it's blissful peace. Can you hear sounds other than my voice? So quiet in here this afternoon. Who'd ever know we were sitting in a city? It's peaceful. And peace is joy. And so those feelings are just amazing. So I trust those. And also in meditation you get much better by going with your feelings rather than the thoughts. Feel your way into deep meditation. Feel the peace, the joy. Don't worry about the thoughts and trying to describe it all. And when in pain, there's two types of pain. There's the physical pain and the emotional response. Physical pain you can't do too much about, but a lot of the time it's amazing. You can be in pain and you go into deep meditation, you can't feel any pain. It's amazing just how when you stop the mental response, most of pain just becomes quite bearable. An incredible pain too. What was it? It's a weird thing to say, but when I was in Thailand, one of the books, we didn't have many books in our library, but one of the books we had in our library in northeast Thailand was a book about how to give birth. And we were a bunch of men. We didn't have girlfriends or wives or anything. And the reason we had it there, because there was this hippie commune in United States a long time ago. They called themselves The Farm. But one thing which they did do, they were really smart, and it became almost like a textbook, teaching sort of women of their community just great ways of giving birth. Number one, which I always remember, what a stupid thing to call it labor pain. As soon as you call it pain, it's going to hurt. And of course it hurts then. So they started calling it labor energy. Just give it a different name and just labor energy. And of course that was brainwashed into people in the commune. They were just pretty limited to the amount of influence they had from outside. Labor energy. And they'd always have not just the husband or the guy, but all the friends around. It was a party when they were giving birth. And when they had a contraction, yeah, go for it. Wow, that was amazing. It was like a football match or a cricket match. And it was just so exciting. And they had one of the doctors, the ordinary doctor there. And the ordinary doctor was just amazed. Just number one, how quick the births were, times of labor was so incredibly short, and so it wasn't painful, it was just energy and powerful energy, just giving birth to a child. And that's, wow, that's really incredible. And anyway, we're talking about labor pain. And that's the reason we had that little book in our monastery, just to see just how perception can change what many people think is painful to be, wow, this is incredibly moving, it's powerful, but I'm not going to call it pain anymore. Anyway, that's regard to feelings and thoughts and when in pain. You call it pain, it's going to hurt. From Indonesia, Ajahn, since this is the last guided meditation before the rains commence, and can you please give a full version of the chant of the Churamangala Sutta? Thank you. A full version? With the suttas, I mean, there was a fellow, I'm not sure if it's the same fellow from Indonesia who suggested I do this, but they give a little chant at the end of the meditation, but it is, just roughly, it's just wishing people happiness and well-being and strength, and just whenever you say to a person, have a wonderful day, and may be happy and well, may you get over the sicknesses, whatever you say like that, if you know, put many words together, and then it has power. And especially after a meditation, it's, you know, in my life, after meditation, that's the most powerful I feel. That's why that, well, I shouldn't give out these little tricks. After you've been on a meditation retreat, like, you know, and I do, always do 2 weeks, I think it's in September sometime this year, I do 2 weeks, I hide in my cave and I don't sort of talk to anybody, except the one who brings my food. And then after that, whoa, your meditation is really powerful. Whoa. So if you get some chanting then, whoa. Full power. And I'm not joking, ooh, you really got some energy. So anyway, but if you want the full version of the Chulamangala Sutta, you can get that in the book. From Germany, I'm in the middle of a breakup and sitting down to meditate makes me feel more anxious because it gives me room for more negative thoughts. Do you have advice on how I can deal with this? Yes, remember, just you partition your day. You're breaking up, but you don't know. It may just come together again. The thoughts just came to my mind. You know that first book which I wrote, The Opening the Door of Your Heart? Somehow or other, I got a couple of copies in the Australian Embassy in Thailand, in Bangkok. And it was passed around to quite a few people there. And they valued it so much that I got this invitation to come and visit to give a talk. And there were three couples in the Australian Embassy in Bangkok. No, four couples. Two were divorced, two were separated, four couples in all. And they read that book and they all came together again. They reconciled. And it was just amazing. They said, well, we've got to get this monk over to give us a talk. So they clubbed together and bought me an air ticket and gave a talk over there. I was just so amazing. Well, how come? And it was just, don't eat the two bad bricks in a wall. Don't expect so much of your partner. Yeah, you can see the two bad bricks, you know, what they did. How about seeing the other things in their wall? And you can appreciate people more. And don't be so critical, as I can't live with that guy, that woman anymore, what they did to me. Yeah, what did they do to you? Did some wonderful things for you. Yeah, they did terrible things as well. Yeah, two bad bricks in the wall. But they've got 998 good bricks. So anyway, but if they're going through a breakup, just don't you need a bit of time out, a rest? Hopefully you do. And you can use meditation as just a break, a rest. So a breakup is not the central feature in your life. It may feel that way, but it's not. How many people here have had breakups in their relationships? Put your hand up. If I didn't have a breakup in my relationship when I was young, I wouldn't be a monk. When I was about 19 or 20, the first time you fell in love. Oh dear. So sometimes it's a nice relief. It's a little place you can go to get some space in meditation. It gives you room for more negative thoughts, but also gives you room for better perspective, for silence. And lastly, from Hong Kong. When painful memories from deep within are bubbling up, what should I do if I need a chance for healing but I have a lot of work at the same time? That is your work. Sometimes it's, people say, I'm too busy to do all of this meditation or to deal with the problems in my life. No, you are not too busy, because if you deal with those problems in life, you find that you do become a person of more time. You create time. That's the old thing. You know what stress is? Here we go again, one of my old similes. I just saw my cup, I know why not use it. How heavy is my cup of water? The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. After 1 minute, it starts to ache. 2 minutes, I'm in pain. 3 minutes, I'm in agony. And actually, I invented this simile, but it's gone around the world. 3 minutes, I'm in pain. But no one actually acknowledges it. I should actually have patented these things. Make a lot of money for our Buddhist society. Of course, you don't do stuff like that. 3 minutes, I'm in great pain. And I'm very stupid. What should I do when this gets too heavy to hold comfortably? Put it down. Obvious. So if you have painful memories from deep within, they're bubbling up, what should you do? It says you put your work down and deal with this problem. And then afterwards, when you dealt with the problem, then your work is very easy to do. In other words, do what the most important thing right now. The thing in front of you is the most important thing in the world. Now is the most important time. And the key part of it, what's the most important thing to do with this? To care for it. To care for the painful memories. Don't try and cure them and get rid of them, because that makes them more painful. Care for them, they're teaching you something. And I often say that the teachers which I learned the most from weren't the ones I liked. They're sometimes painful, but I learned so much from them. So sometimes the experiences in life where you really learn, you don't choose them. Sometimes they can be painful, but you learn so much from them, you understand so much. And what you understand is that wonderful little saying, in very brief, when somebody in Singapore, they asked me, can you please explain the Buddha's teaching of suffering? And I said, I've only got a minute because I've got to go to work. I love that little, and because they didn't have time. And so I told them, said, suffering is asking from the world something it can't give to you. Well, that was really, I thought that was really quite cute and quite sort of precise. When you ask from this world what it can't give you, that's called suffering. It's no one's fault, it's just the world. So you've got painful memories. We've all got painful memories somewhere. So you can't expect just to not have a life without a painful memory, or two, or three, or a dozen, or a heap. But we learn from them. And when we're kind to them, we look upon them as our teacher. And soon we learn so much, we do really become wise, kind, peaceful beings. A lot of work at the same time, you don't have too much work. People say, I do. No, you make work. Leave it alone and deal with the painful feelings. Get to know them, be kind to them. Go on a walk in the forest somewhere, or by the beach. Get some great comfort and teachings from nature. And there you can get these wonderful insights into just how healing happens. And healing does happen, and it's wonderful to see it. Okay, so thank you for that question from Hong Kong. Are there any questions from the audience sitting here? No one ever puts their hands up, but there'll be a few people in front afterwards, like last night. Okay, so let's bow to the Buddha. Oh no, I said the Chula Mangala Sutta. Yeah, the little chant first of all, which is a nice one. Sabaroga Vinimuto Sabba Santa Pavajito Sabba Vera Mati Gando Nibuto Chatu Wang Bawa Sabitio Viva Chantusa Sabaroga Vinasatu Mate Bhavan vantarayo sukhiti gayu gopava apiva danha silitsa nichang vuta pachalino chataro dhamma vatanti Ayuvano sukhang balang. Sadhu, yeah. Excellent. Have a wonderful time. And even though I'm not coming up here for a while, I'm always having Bodhinyana Monastery, so you can always come and see me down there. I've come and seen you many times, so now it's time for you to come and see us. Excellent. So have a wonderful time. You now can bow three times if you wish to.